Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive? Today, we're strapping on our archaeological boots and venturing into the world of the Old Testament.
Ooh, sounds exciting.
It is. We'll be digging into excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Jonathan Greer. He's a leading expert on the archaeology of ancient Israel. And he makes a really interesting point right off the bat. He says, you can't understand the archaeology of this region without first grasping its geography.
It makes sense. It's like trying to solve a puzzle without knowing the shape of the pieces, right?
Exactly. Dr. Greer uses this phrase, the land between, to describe ancient Israel. And it really captures how this area was wedged between these massive empires, Egypt and Mesopotamia.
Right. So you've got these major powers on either side.
Yeah. Constant tension and movement.
And not just armies marching back and forth, but trade routes, cultural influences.
A real crossroads.
Well, absolutely.
But what about the land itself? I mean, Dr. Greer seems to suggest that the terrain played a major role, too.
Oh, absolutely. He talks about the diversity of the landscape. You got deserts, coastline, and in between, all these different zones with their own unique resources and challenges.
So it wasn't just about empires clashing. It was about people adapting to the land itself. It makes me think about Jerusalem, such an important city, even today. Was its location strategically chosen because of these geographical factors?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Up in the highlands, natural defenses, reliable water source.
Not just a spiritual center, but a stronghold.
Exactly. And you see that pattern repeated throughout ancient Israel.
Okay, so we've got this image of ancient Israel, this dynamic, contested land shaped as much by its geography as by the empires surrounding it. But how do we move from this big picture view to understanding the lives of the people who actually live there?
Well, that's where archaeology comes in.
For a time machine.
Exactly. And just like with any good investigation, you need to know where to start looking for clues.
Right. So where do archaeologists even begin?
Dr. Greer talks about these regional surveys. Archaeologists basically scour the landscape, looking for signs of past settlements.
So they're not just randomly digging holes.
No. It's much more systematic than that. And you know what plays a surprisingly big role in these surveys?
Let me guess.
Bones.
Pottery shards.
Pottery.
Seriously.
Those little pieces of broken pottery are like fingerprints. Each one is unique to a specific time period and location.
So they can help pinpoint promising sites.
Exactly. And even give a rough idea of their chronology. He used a really interesting analogy to explain this concept of relative dating.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Something about a Coke bottle.
Yes. He said, imagine finding a Coke bottle from, say, the 1950s versus one from the 1980s. You'd be able to tell them apart based on their style, right?
Yeah, the shape, the logo, the color of the glass.
Right. Well, it's the same with pottery. Those seemingly insignificant shards can reveal a lot about the people who made and used them.
So by analyzing their style, archaeologists can start to build a timeline.
Exactly. They can determine if one layer of a site is older or younger than another based on the pottery styles found in each layer.
Fascinating. So let's say, based on those pottery clues, a site looks promising. What's next? Do they just grab their shovels and start digging?
Not quite. We need to talk about tells.
Ah, tells, those iconic mounds you see all over the ancient Near East.
Right, and they're not natural hills, you know?
Yeah.
They're actually layers upon layers of human occupation.
Built up over centuries.
Sometimes millennia. Amazing, isn't it?
It is. But knowing that a tell is made up of these layers, how do archaeologists actually go about excavating them without mixing everything up?
Very carefully. Dr. Greer really emphasized that tell excavation is a meticulous process. They divide the site into a grid, almost like a giant chessboard, and then
they start digging.
They carefully remove each layer one by one, documenting everything they find.
So it's like peeling back the layers of time?
Exactly. Each layer represents a different slice of history. And just like a good detective, archaeologists need to figure out the order of events.
And that's where dating techniques come in, right?
You got it.
He talked about relative and absolute dating.
Right. Relative dating is like what we just discussed with the pottery, figuring out if one layer is older or younger than another. But absolute dating tries to pinpoint a more specific year or range of years.
Ah, okay. So one is about sequence. The other is about pinning it down to a specific time.
Exactly. And for absolute dating, one of the most important tools is radiocarbon dating.
That's the one that analyzes the decay of radioactive carbon.
Right. You know your stuff.
Oh, I try. But I remember he mentioned there's some wiggle room with this method.
Yeah, there are always margins of error and things like fluctuations in atmospheric carbon levels over time. So scientists use these calibration curves to adjust for those variations.
So even with these high-tech methods, there's still some detective work involved in interpreting the data.
Absolutely. And sometimes that wiggle room can lead to some pretty lively debates, especially when it comes to trying to date events mentioned in the Old Testament.
Ooh, I can imagine.
Oh, believe me, those debates can get quite heated. But we'll delve into those a bit later.
Okay, so we've carefully excavated our tell. We've got our layers, our dates, and a treasure trove of artifacts. What happens to all that stuff?
Well, all those artifacts are like pieces of evidence, right?
Right.
Dr. Greer stressed how crucial it is to record everything meticulously.
Because once you've dug something up, there's no putting it back exactly as it was.
Exactly. Archaeology is, in a sense, a destructive science.
So good record keeping is key.
Absolutely. And the methods have evolved dramatically over time. He talked about everything from hand-drawn sketches.
To 3D models created with drones and lasers.
It's amazing how technology is transforming the field.
It is.
And all that data, all those artifacts and features, lead to the next stage analysis.
Okay, so we're talking about examining those ancient stones, bones, pots, everything.
Exactly. And it's not just about identifying objects, but understanding how they were used, what they meant to the people who made and used them.
Right, putting those pieces of the puzzle together.
Exactly. It's about trying to reconstruct their daily lives, their beliefs, their values.
Almost like stepping back in time.
In a way, yes. And Dr. Greer talked about this approach called ethnoarchaeology. It draws comparisons with traditional societies today to understand how ancient people might have used similar objects.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's like trying to put yourself in their shoes. But sometimes, he pointed out, our modern perspectives can lead us astray. He gave that funny example about the Little Mermaid.
Thinking a fork was a hairbrush.
Exactly. It's a reminder that we need to be careful not to impose our own assumptions on the past.
Okay, so we've gone from understanding the big picture of ancient Israel's geography to diving deep into the nitty-gritty of archaeological methods.
Surveys, excavations, dating, analysis.
It's a fascinating but intricate process.
It is. But there's still another piece of the puzzle, isn't there?
You're right. We've talked about the physical remains, but what about
The written word, ancient texts and images.
a whole other world of evidence? Okay, I'm definitely intrigued. Let's hear it.
Imagine trying to put together a puzzle, but half the pieces are missing. That's what it was like before scholars could read the languages of the ancient Near East.
It's like trying to understand a conversation, but you only catch every other word.
Exactly. So much of what we know about the past comes from written records. So how did they even begin to crack the code of these lost languages?
Yeah, it sounds almost impossible. Where do you even start?
It was a long process, but there were some key discoveries that really unlocked those ancient scripts. Dr. Greer mentioned the Rosetta Stone.
Ah, for Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Right. And for Mesopotamian cuneiform, the Dissin inscription, these discoveries were like giant linguistic keys.
The Rosetta Stone, I remember seeing that at the British Museum, the same text in different languages, right? Incredible to think one stone could revolutionize our understanding of ancient Egypt.
It really is. And the Abyssinian inscription, high on a cliff in Iran, equally groundbreaking. Three different cuneiform scripts, allowing scholars to finally decipher this ancient writing system.
Wow. So thanks to these discoveries, we can now access this treasure trove of ancient texts. What kind of stuff did they write about?
Oh, everything. Royal decrees, legal documents, contracts, letters, myths, poems, even shopping lists. It gives us such a fascinating glimpse into their lives, their thoughts, their world.
It's like eavesdropping on a conversation from thousands of years ago. Amazing. But how do these texts actually help us understand the archaeology of ancient Israel? Do they directly reference the events or people mentioned in the Old Testament?
Sometimes they do. But even when they don't mention specific biblical figures or events, they provide incredible context for interpreting archaeological finds. Like, imagine archaeologists uncover a temple. Reading ancient texts, they can learn about the rituals performed there, the gods they worship, the social hierarchy. It adds so much depth to what would otherwise just be stones and artifacts.
So the texts help explain the why behind the what that archaeologists dig up.
Exactly. And sometimes those texts even challenge our assumptions about the past. Dr. Greer briefly talked about the Amarna letters.
The Amarna letters refresh my memory.
They're a collection of clay tablets found in Egypt, diplomatic correspondence between the Egyptian pharaoh and his vassals in Canaan, which included ancient Israel.
So real historical figures and events, not just biblical stories.
Right. And what's interesting is These letters paint a picture of a region in turmoil, local rulers vying for power, defying the pharaoh.
So not this monolithic, all-powerful Egyptian empire controlling everything.
Exactly. It challenges the traditional view.
Okay, so we've got all these incredible texts giving us these peeks into politics, daily life, all sorts of things. But let's zoom back in on the Old Testament. Are there specific texts that directly relate to the stories and people in those books?
There are definitely texts that deal with the same time periods and regions. But the thing is, the Bible and these other ancient texts, they often present different perspectives, sometimes even conflicting accounts.
It's like having multiple witnesses to an event, each with their own interpretation.
That's a great analogy. And it's important to approach these discussions carefully and with an open mind.
Right, because these texts are products of their time and their purpose might be different.
Exactly. So it's not about trying to prove or disprove the Bible, but understanding these different perspectives, recognizing that there can be multiple interpretations of the past.
Multiple pieces to the puzzle. Okay, so the relationship between archaeology and the Bible is complex. Can you give us some concrete examples of how this plays out?
Sure. Let's take the conquest of Canaan, a major event in the Old Testament. The Bible describes this swift military campaign led by Joshua, the Israelites, conquering the land and establishing their dominance.
Right, but what does the archaeology say?
Well, there's evidence of destruction and upheaval at various sites in Canaan during that time period. But it wasn't this uniform, widespread conquest like the Bible describes.
So a more complicated picture.
Much more. Some scholars even suggest that the biblical narrative might have been shaped by later agendas, you know, emphasizing a unified conquest to solidify claims to the land.
Interesting. So the Bible might be presenting a more idealized version of events.
It's a possibility.
Yeah.
And the Exodus, the escape from Egypt. Some scholars propose that might have been a more gradual process. Different groups leaving over a longer period, which would make it harder to track archaeologically.
So we have these potential tensions between the biblical narrative and the archaeological evidence. How do scholars try to make sense of this?
It's an ongoing discussion. Some scholars put more emphasis on the historical value of the biblical text, arguing that it shouldn't be dismissed, even if it doesn't perfectly align with the archaeology.
So they're saying it might still hold valuable clues, even if it's not always literally accurate.
Right. Maybe preserving authentic traditions or memories. And other scholars lean more heavily on the archaeological data, seeing it as a more objective lens.
Different approaches, each with their own strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly. And I think the key is to consider both carefully. Recognize that there might not always be a simple answer, a single truth.
It's a reminder that history isn't always black and white. Okay, so we've talked about how archaeology can inform our understanding of the Bible. But what about the other way around? How does the Bible, as a historical and literary text, contribute to archaeology?
Oh, it can be incredibly valuable. The Bible, with its stories, genealogies, descriptions of places and practices, it can provide context for understanding archaeological finds.
So it can act like a guide, pointing archaeologists in the right direction.
In a way, yes, like a treasure map. But of course, we have to be cautious about bias.
Right. If you start with the assumption that the Bible is accurate, that could definitely color your interpretation of the evidence.
Absolutely. Archaeologists have to be aware of that. Approach the events critically. Consider alternative explanations.
So use the Bible as a tool, but don't take it literally.
Exactly. It can provide clues, but we need to corroborate those with other evidence. Be open to the possibility that the archaeological record might tell a different story.
It's like having a conversation with the past, with both the Bible and archaeology participating.
I like that. Conversation with different voices and perspectives.
And sometimes those conversations get a little heated. Speaking of which, I'm curious to hear about some of the biggest unsolved mysteries or ongoing debates in this field. What are the questions that really keep archaeologists up at night?
Oh, there are so many mysteries, but one that always sparks debate is the united monarchy of David and Solomon.
Ah, yes, the legendary kingdom of Israel, right?
Exactly. But while the Bible depicts this powerful kingdom, the archaeology is a bit more, well, fragmented.
Fragmented how?
We see signs of increased building, settlements expanding in the 10th century BCE, which is the time period associated with David and Solomon.
Yeah, but it's not as clear-cut as the biblical narrative.
Right. Those who are skeptical point out that we haven't found a clearly defined capital city, a central hub for this supposed united monarchy.
So instead of one big kingdom, it might have been more like
a collection of regional centers, each with its own distinct culture and political structure.
So it comes down to how you interpret the evidence.
Exactly. And to complicate matters, many key sites from this period, like Jerusalem, are difficult to excavate.
Because of modern development.
Exactly. Imagine layers of history hidden beneath the city, potentially holding the answers. Frustrating, but also kind of thrilling, you know?
I can see that. Okay, so the United Monarchy is a big one. What other archaeological puzzles are out there?
Well, the Exodus is another. The Israelites escaping slavery in Egypt.
That's a foundational story in the Old Testament, right? I mean, surely there's archaeological evidence for that.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. But it's surprisingly elusive. We have evidence of Semitic people living in Egypt during that period, but...
But no signs of this mass exodus.
Not as the Bible describes it, no. No parting of the Red Sea, no massive campsites in the Sinai.
So how do archaeologists explain that?
Well, some say maybe it happened, but just didn't leave a clear archaeological trace.
Possible, I guess. Archaeology isn't an exact science, right?
Right. But others propose that the biblical account might be more symbolic.
Yeah.
A collective memory of liberation rather than a literal event.
So once again, more questions than answers.
Which is what keeps it exciting. The Exodus, like the United Monarchy, will likely be debated for years to come.
It seems like a lot of this comes down to interpretation, filling in the gaps.
Exactly. And that's part of the beauty of archaeology, piecing together those fragments, recognizing that there might be multiple perspectives, multiple narratives.
And that brings us back to something we touched on earlier, ancient images. You mentioned Egyptian tomb paintings, Mesopotamian palace reliefs. What can those tell us?
They're like another dimension of evidence. These images provide glimpses into their beliefs, their rituals, their clothing, their military tactics.
So we can literally see how they lived, what they valued.
Exactly. And I think some of the most striking images are the battle scenes from Assyrian palaces.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. The detail is incredible.
It is. You can almost feel the chaos, the brutality of war. And then you have the Egyptian tomb paintings. So much symbolism, their beliefs about death and the afterlife.
It's amazing that we can connect with these ancient cultures through their art.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes this feel so compelling. We're not just digging up objects. We're connecting with human stories, with ideas and beliefs that have shaped our world.
It's about making those connections across time and space.
Exactly. And recognizing that despite the differences, there are also these universal themes that resonate with us today. The search for meaning, the desire for belonging, the struggle for power. These are all things that humans have grappled with for millennia.
And we can learn from those struggles, those triumphs, those failures.
Absolutely. History is not just about the past. It's about understanding ourselves, our place in the world.
That's a great point. So for our listeners who are now inspired to explore this world further, any suggestions? Where can they start?
Oh, there's so many great resources out there. Books, museums, online databases. You could literally hold a piece of the past in your hands.
I love that image, holding a piece of the past. It's a tangible connection to these ancient lives, these ancient stories.
It really is. And it's a reminder that the past is not static. It's not dead. It's alive in these objects, these texts, these images. And it's waiting to be rediscovered, reinterpreted, brought back to life.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap up our deep dive into archaeology in the Old Testament. Thank you so much for joining us on this fascinating journey.
It's been a pleasure sharing this exploration with you. And I hope this sparks a curiosity in our listeners to delve deeper, to ask their own questions, and to never stop exploring the mysteries of the past.